Art Major, Chair of the Canton Water Pollution Control Authority, calling a public hearing Monday, April 6th, 2026. It's 6:00 PM. And we have Larry Minicello, Dick, myself, Bob Selmer, Nick. So we have a quorum, Nicolette, and we have Sarah from the Board of Selectmen. So we have a quorum. I will go ahead and read the notice of the public hearing. I don't think I have to read the title. Notification is hereby given of a public hearing on the resolution of sewer usage and connection charges to be set by the Water Pollution Control Authority in accordance with provisions of Connecticut General Statutes, Chapter 103, Section 7. The public hearing will be held on April 6, 2026 at 6:00 PM at the Canton Community Center, 40 Dyer Avenue, Canton, Connecticut. A copy of the proposed resolution was placed on file with the town clerk on March 9, 2026 and is available for a public inspection during the town hall regular hours of operation and online at www.townofcanton.org. Water Pollution Control Authority Chairman Art Major. So we discussed fees at our last meeting, and we are looking at roughly a 5% increase in our operating, 3%?
Oh, for
In the operating budget,
yes.
We have increased expenses on sludge hauling, electricity, salaries, insurance, other things. We also have several capital projects ongoing, well, if we call it the facilities plan that we're undertaking with a consulting engineer to look at the present and future needs of our plant that we have matching expenses on. So we have some major expenses in our budget and may have some more capital projects going forward. So at our last meeting, we discussed raising the fees $15 per year. So the changes in our fee regulations would be on page 2. We start out with the first sentence, basic sanitary sewage units will be charged $530 per annum, which was $515 before. And then for commercial users and public buildings, commercial and public building users will be charged $7.40 per 1,000 gallons of metered annual usage, or $5.54 per each 100 cubic feet of metered annual usage, depending on the type of meter, subject to a minimum charge of $530. And then we go on. So those are the changes proposed. And the change in the commercial use is sort of proportional to the change for, I'll say, single family dwellers, apartments, et cetera. That's a basic summary of where we're at. Do we have a member of the public? Were you here to make a statement?
Yes.
Okay, if you can identify yourself and go ahead.
I'm Sherry for the 2 Maple Ave. I am connected to the sewer.
Uh-huh.
So, within the few of our neighbors who don't understand, other than we get a bill once a year, uh-huh, equipment paid twice a year, that's as much as we really have been able to ascertain about what we get a bill, but we really we know that for the connection to the sewer, but we don't understand what all that encompasses and why our annual fee is so much higher than, say, Simsbury, who's at $392 for 25-26. So it's been difficult to try and figure out from the town's website any information about the plant and its expenses and all bar fees are going up, are their fees going up as well? Or how often are those negotiated? Are we paying more proportion than the other towns are paying because they don't have a plant? And also in, because I live alone in a single family home, recently the homes I've been bought out, we have several homes that have apartments in them. From what I'm able to ascertain is that those homes are paying the same rate that I'm paying. So I wanna make sure that that's a correct assumption or not. The other thing is that a landlord can raise their rents whenever those expenses go up, where I'm stuck with having to make do with what I've got. You know, I'm a widow living alone on a fixed income, and I actually took a decrease in Social Security this year between Medicare took a big hit and so did all of the other insurances go with it. So I'm living on less already. I've been trying to do more with all of these increases that I'm being hit with. Some towns have senior discounts. I don't know if Canton has ever explored that or not. We just feel like seniors are being driven out of town with these additional expenses. I realize some of them are uncontrollable, but some of them are. So it's just confusing. We just need a better understanding of what it is that we're paying for. Are the schools over here, are they connected to the sewer system?
All but Cherry Brook. Cherry Brook's not.
Okay. Do they pay a fee for?
Yeah, so yes. All the town facilities also pay in.
A fee too.
And they're essentially other departments, public works, the public works garage, the police station, the fire station, the schools. They pay as if they're a separate, almost like a commercial user in a way.
And I happen to be going through the budget. It's difficult. There's so many pieces to it. I've yet to find out where the sewer plant is located in the budget. I don't see any.
Well, we have a separate budget. Now I'm starting to answer things one at a time. But we have our own budget that is separate from the town municipal budget for all. So we have separate fiscal budgeting.
All of our revenue is kept separate from the general fund that's put together by the tax base.
And the operating costs as well.
Yeah, anything that a sewer user pays for, whether it's for connection or sewer use, stays within the sewer department. No other department can take any of that money and use it for, you know, ball fields or anything other.
So it's sort of like the schools?
No, schools are on the tax dollar.
Sort of the state of Connecticut government that created legislation that creates water pollution control authorities. And those authorities have their own budget separate from the towns.
So even though the town collects the money from us.
The tax collector does our billing for us, correct?
The WPCA pays the town tax collector to do our collecting.
I was sort of thinking of us as a separate, I'll say, department with our own budget that's not part of, like I said, the normal town budgeting process. So we have to be sort of self-sufficient based on our user fees.
We do have public hearings, though, with respect to when we do put our budgets together. And those are published annually.
Well, that's the other thing, too, is that other than if I hadn't seen a person post this on Facebook, I've signed up for all the town emails, but I got nothing about anything. I've ever got anything about the
kind of like, you should have gotten it, because I got it, it came through the Q-Notify, which is the town blast, you get those?
The town, yeah, the town, yeah.
There was one that went out, I'm surprised you didn't get it, you might want to check what you're signed up for.
I went back and signed up Ventura, that's in a thing that's, part of the website, did why it needs to be fixed, but, because it doesn't tell me what I'm, what I was signed up for, or what I'm not signed up for, but anyhow. But I thought I had signed up for every single thing, and I went back and did it again, so I don't know why I haven't received anything, but that's.
Okay, well, I wanted to go through some of the questions you raised. I think the first one was, why are our fees higher than some of the surrounding towns? And I think the main reason is, we don't have a lot of users paying into the system. So compared to Simsbury, where, I don't know, there's 30,000 residents, and I'm sure they're not all on the sewer system, but there's, I don't know how many people would be on the sewer users over there, but it might be 10,000, or, and there's more commercial and apartment buildings and so on that are paying in. We have roughly 2,000, is it two, more than that now?
2,000-ish connections, but it's about 2,900, units when you break it down.
So it's harder for us to, per person or per household, to finance things at the treatment plant. And, you know, when you compare us to major cities, like Hartford, MDC is the big sewer authority, and they have something like 100,000 users, and their fees are much lower than smaller towns. So unfortunately, and when there's repairs and, you know, capital costs that need to be fixed, we have less people per, you know, to, per whatever expense to, I'll say, tax. The other thing is that we have an aging sewer system and plant, where right now we're sort of facing some additional expenses to finally take care of some of these aging facilities and sewer pipes. And so some, maybe things are coming due on fixing older parts of the sewage treatment plant and the piping system. And it's time to get things fixed. So that's part of our expenses right now, too, that are a little bit higher than they have been in the past. And then there's the operating costs that, you know, like I said, electricity and hauling sludge and those kind of annual operating costs. So those are the kind of things that affect our fees. I'll have John talk about the other towns and how they pay in. Like, we also pay, parts of Canton go to Farmington, so there's some, I don't know, why don't you go ahead with the.
Yeah, so we do have intermunicipal agreements with Burlington, Avon, and Farmington. We treat Burlington's sewage that they pump to us, and that's a metered flow, and we charge them by the gallon, so just like they were a commercial user in Canton. And then there's a few gravity homes that come, and we charge them the same rate that we would charge a Canton resident. So that's how that intermunicipal agreement works. Avon's a little different, it's kind of a confusing formula, but it does go up as our expenses increase, their cost for treatment increases as well. And then we also have an agreement with Farmington. We pay Farmington to treat some of our wastewater, and that's in the Secret Lake area. So we send it through Avon, actually. There's a kind of like a tri-town agreement. And we pay per 1,000 gallon for Farmington to treat our wastewater.
Okay, so every year, though, as my costs go up, those other towns will go up as well?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. And as far as apartment dwellings, it is per unit, not per building, right? I mean,
yep, yeah, so every EDU would be like a single family dwelling would be one unit, two family dwelling would be two units, if it's, you know, and so on. So that's how they're charged. If it's 100 units in one building, they're charged the minimum rate times 100. So every dwelling unit is charged the same amount for sewer usage.
I'm sorry, with a cell. So like my neighbor, one of the homes has two, it's a two-family.
Mm-hmm.
So they're charged two fees?
Correct, yes. Their bill this past year would have been $1,030.
Whether they're occupied or not.
Yeah, we don't track occupancy. We don't track, yeah.
Okay, that was, it's all very helpful. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Thank you for coming.
Yeah, thanks for your
visitors.
Interest. And one thing, since we're doing this engineering plan for our sewer system, we're going to have a lot more sort of public informational meetings this year. So you can expect, publicity and some presentations by our engineers on what's going on with the sewer system, so.
I appreciate that. I said it's the reason that we'll come before is.
Yeah.
Didn't know when to go by.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
You're welcome. I guess we have no further public comments, so I will adjourn this meeting at 6:17 PM.
Do you want a copy of the public meeting schedule?
Yeah, sure.
So now that we've concluded the public hearing portion, I'll open the we're still recording. Again, this is Art Major calling to order the Canton Water Pollution Control Authority April 6, 2026 meeting. And again, we have myself, Bob Selmer, Nick Ouellette, Dick Daly, Larry Menicello, and we have Sarah Faulkner representing Board of Selectmen. We have no members of the public. And our first item is proposed changes to the resolution of sewer usage and connection charges. And I think I'll go ahead and make a motion, and if we have any discussion on the motion, we can proceed. So I'll move the WPCA adopt a resolution of sewer usage and connection charges as presented and reviewed during the public hearing held by the Canton WPCA on April 6, 2026. I have a second. And Bob? And now, any discussion?
I guess I do have a question. The one question she asked that didn't get answered is the reduced fee for seniors. Do other towns have that? And is that something that we could ever look into? And what would be the cutoff? I don't know what, I couldn't do it for anyone over 50, or I don't know what that age would be, but certainly someone.
It's a good question.
Yeah, I'm fairly certain it can be done. I think it's in the general statutes that can be incorporated into your billing policy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think other towns do offer that.
I don't think a lot of them do.
Not too many, but
I think it's common, but I think some reduction might have
some value if, you do have someone who wants to stay in town and they're truly, in a hardship position because of, it might be worth looking into. In fact, I think I would like to look into that.
Is there a tax? Is that offered for taxes in Canton?
I don't know.
Because that would be.
My guess is that it would be just through a reduction in fee. So you charge some percentage lower for seniors.
Right.
Acceptance of the age at which you do that.
It's also driven by income.
Yeah, that was sort of my question is, does it just strictly based on age, or would you have to have some income criteria that then we would have to review or?
Age and income, I believe.
The existing programs we have in town now are not driven by income. I think because it becomes a burden it's a privacy invasion. So you have to be careful about what the information is and what you use. Is it their 1040 that you're looking at But I would agree that I think we have a fair number of. I've heard the number of a third of the population of Canton, maybe even close to 50% right now, is over the age of 60. It's high. And if a lot of those people are north of 44, they're not in the sewer district, but there are a fair number here in the sewer district, and Board of Selectmen's been hearing from a number of seniors saying, you know, it's getting awfully expensive to stay here. And I think it might be a good idea to figure out a way to make some reduction for seniors, particularly if they're single. Because if you have a single elderly homeowner who's on fixed income, not a pension or just Social Security, this kind of increase is big. And because it's gone up enough over the last 5 years, it really is starting to be a burden to people. So I think it'd be good to look into it.
Yeah, it'd be good if that information is readily available so I could see how it would affect our revenues, because we'd have to balance it out.
Somebody else would have to make up a difference, so yeah.
I think the town clerk has that data, so they could tell you how old people are, who's alone, or who's in a couple. I think we have that data.
Sarah, for property taxes, isn't there a way to apply for some reduction?
There is, and that one's based on income. So they do have some on income, so maybe we can piggyback on what the town's already doing.
As far as what I'm seeing here on our town, it says applicants must fall within state-defined income limits for the year which they are getting an adjusted tax reduction.
I don't know how they do that, so it's...
Maybe if you applied for the property tax reduction and qualified, then we might say then you could qualify for both.
Yeah.
If they already have a way of vetting it.
That would be it.
They also do a veterans discount. And I don't know if you want to look at that or not, too. And then there's a firefighter discount. I think that's it. Those are the three. I would not recommend the firefighter discount because it's been highly controversial. I will say that their benefits to firefighters have been very successful. They managed to retain firefighters and attract some new ones. They've got a little host of goodies they give to people in filing EMS.
Well, I think one place to start would be to look at other towns' regulations that have a discount and see maybe how common it is in the state. If John, if you can, through your association, see if you can find out and something we can look at over the next year?
Yeah. It's too late for this year.
This is our meeting to decide for this year's fees, yeah.
Yeah.
Any other discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay, motion carries. And next would be to look at the minutes, section 4, right? And section 3. From March 2nd. Wait a minute. We have to do the special meeting? Wait a minute. This is the regular meeting listed first and then the special meeting.
Okay.
So let's look at the minutes for the regular meeting Monday, March 2nd. Make a motion the WPCA approve the March 2nd, 2026 regular meeting minutes as presented. And the second?
Second.
And Bob? Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
I'm abstaining. I was not present.
Well, one abstention from Larry. And next we have the minutes from the special meeting from March 23rd. Thanks again to everybody for coming out to that one. What an off night.
I hereby move the WPCA approve the March 23rd, 2026 special meeting minutes as presented.
Second?
Second.
Second from Bob. All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay. We're on to John with open projects.
All right, so the updates I have to give for open projects are the highlighted ones. So Applegate Village, we now have 30 of the 34 units there are actively using sewer and being billed. So those are dwindling down. Should see those in probably the next few months, I would imagine, the remaining four. Shake Shack at the shops. They completed their installation of new grease trap equipment. So they installed two 1,500 gallon grease traps and retapped the sewer main. That project's complete. Another project proposed at the shops is Wonder Restaurant. It's primarily gonna be a takeout restaurant and it's gonna be located at the old AT&T. So the same building as Panera Bread. I think it's Panera Bread. So they're basically the same idea as what Shake Shack did. They're turning a retail space into a restaurant, so that comes with a change of use and a fee associated with it. So their change of use application was approved and they submitted technical plans and those were approved. So smaller size. They're not doing two 1,500 gallons. They're doing one 1,000 gallon grease trap, but that's sufficient for the impact that their restaurant would add as far as gallonage. And then we have another proposal for 225 Commerce Drive. Favar wants to add another building to their property, and that would be a 3EDU building, primarily commercial office space use, and they'd be tapping the sewer main that we own out in a right of way.
Where's that going to go, John?
Right next to the existing 225.
Is that as you go up Commerce? Is it on the right or left?
On the right.
Right. Okay.
I think it's the first building on the right. I think it's the first building on the right. Right on that same property. They want to add a building just maybe 100 feet away from the existing.
I haven't seen anything come into P&Z for that. Okay.
How does that fit within our policy? This is 3 or less, so
three is, yeah, the three is the threshold that WPCA voted on. That's okay to accept.
Commercial office building won't use a lot of water.
Yeah, it's a low impact development, but that'd be a 3EDU building. So those are the only ones that I have to report on, but there's other interest in town that I'm hearing about, so we'll see what comes through. Some of them I think the WPCA can act on and others maybe not yet. I know 75 Old Canton Road's seeing interest. That's the old auction barn. That was approved years ago and kind of on the, it's actually on our list here, and kind of grandfathered in. But then there's some interest in Winterbourne Lane, an extension there. And that's Canterbury Heights. I think a phase that was approved years ago through planning and zoning, but no one ever acted on it, the developer. So some interest in that, but
as far as how we manage this report, I noticed that we don't have a 12 there.
Right.
That's probably because it's been fulfilled.
Right.
In keeping spirit with what we're doing with the DEP, this list is changing. I think we need to, just as long as we have the history of this list, that we're able to support the idea that we are following our policy. Going.
Yeah, it could always be tracked back. That's why I keep everything filed that way.
And number 16 is new essentially this month. Okay.
You said Winterbourne? Are you
No, I'm just saying, those are, I, things I'm hearing. I'm hearing, they're not actual proposals. But just want to keep you up to date that in the next few months, maybe we'll be hearing things, maybe, maybe not.
Where is the, I don't know what it is the thing behind CVS? Is that on here too?
That's file number 2, 115 Albany Turnpike.
Okay.
And again, that Winterborne, what street is that off of again?
It's behind the mini golf, Canterbury Heights.
Okay, yeah, okay, I know where Canterbury Heights is.
Is one of the streets in there.
Is it part of that, that big, the big collection up there?
Yes.
Can I add to that?
Yep. There's interest in it, I'd say.
Okay, we can move along to John's monthly report, March 2026.
All right, so for the month of March, our average daily flow was 811,000 gallons per day. So a little elevated because of snow melt and rains. Our peak 180-day moving average flow was 0.545 million gallons per day, or 57% of our design flow. We measured 5.17 inches of rainfall at the facility. Things to update on at the treatment plant are, so we have two main SCADA computers. One acts as the server, and the other acts as a duplicate, and you can control and monitor from each of them. But our the main one, the server, that's connected to our alarm call-out system, that one failed on us. So we had Woodard and Curran came in and took the redundant computer.
Tiki left,
and
one other.
Set that one up as our SCADA server and put our call out on that. They were able to get that done in a pretty quick amount of time. But it means we're kind of on our last leg as far as SCADA goes. So our SCADA system, it's operating on Windows 7. It's an old system. It's hard to get, it's hard, you can't really upgrade your computers without upgrading your software, and it gets very costly. This is something we've been looking at for kind of a while now, because it's growing into more of an issue. So I did ask, this was a few months ago, Woodard and Curran to look into a interim SCADA upgrade project, because we really can't wait for a facility improvement project to upgrade our SCADA. So SCADA, what it does is all the controls, all the reports that we receive that we compile and submit to DEP, and all the monitoring and alarm call out. Without SCADA, we wouldn't get alarm calls if something is broken in the middle of the night. And so it's very, very important to our treatment plant, but it's something that's failing us right now. We have it working, but it's on, there's no redundancy. So we're trying to band-aid it the best we can and maybe come up with a solution that it's like kind of like an interim upgrade, new computers, new software, take the old programming, relay it over, have a better call out system, because the new alarm call out systems that would match you know, Windows 11 or whatever the newest one is they're not very good.
What's the operating system of the redundant computer?
They're both Windows 7.
We'll probably get both of them upgraded.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I'm not super tech savvy, so I don't really know this entirely, but I know basically the server computer failed, has two drives in it, and both drives were unresponsive. Basically, if one fails, it's supposed to mirror the other and then pick up, and that's like the redundancy within one machine. And then that wasn't working, so they went to the other machine, and one of the two drives is working. So out of four, we're down to one.
Does that maintain history?
It normally would, yeah. I mean, I'm not sure if we lost anything. We did lose our reports, so our monthly operating report, it's gonna be a lot of handwritten, which is not the end of the world, but it's definitely time consuming.
Okay. And Wood and Curran's given you a date in which they'll have that?
I wouldn't say a date, but kind of trying to expedite it and get a proposal. Maybe we, hopefully we're talking about it next meeting.
You have some ballpark estimate, what we're talking about here?
No, no, I have no ballpark.
Okay.
Aside from that, our UV disinfection system, in March we went through and did a lot of maintenance on those, so it's broken up into two banks, and one bank of lamps was due for replacement, so we replaced all 42 of those lamps. We installed new wiper seals on all of the modules, they're called. New quartz sleeve O-rings were replaced as well. When you take it apart, you're supposed to replace the O-ring. Hydraulic oil and filter was replaced. That's for the automatic cleaning system, and the system was put online mid-March, just to make sure everything was okay, and that'll stay online for the disinfection season, April 1st to October 31st.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
How frequently, is this a once-a-year thing when you do all these, or a couple times a year?
Maintenance on it.
You like this kind of maintenance?
Every year we'll do some sort of maintenance. It depends on schedule.
Uh-huh.
So a set of lamps, a lamp is guaranteed to, or they warranty for 12,000 hours. So once it has 12,000 hours, it almost seems like it's right on to, because as soon as we hit that, they start failing. And I don't know how they gauge that, but they do.
Yeah.
So we change them right when you have to change them.
Engineers.
So it, yeah. So I ended up that this year we had to do that bank. I'm not sure if we're due for another bank next year or we'll be skipping a year.
Okay. Yeah, just curious.
But, yeah. Some other updates.
Excuse me, John, is that 24/7? The lamps run 24/7?
Yeah. Yep, 24/7. As long as through disinfection season. And then after October 31st, we'll take all the modules out and we'll store them inside for the winter.
Yeah.
And then do our regular, we always do some sort of maintenance, whether it's just cleaning and some replacements, or it's something major like this year. Other updates would be the Huckleberry Hill Kingswood Tower location. We switched the cell a while back, but our equipment was still located there, so we actually went up there and removed all that. Now that the ice and snow is gone. Generally, that's it as far as anything to report. I was going to mention something about our primary clarifiers, but I can do that later on when we talk about the major
the rehab
projects.
Project. Okay.
Now, just to go back to the computer for a second, if that computer that there is now failed,
mm-hmm.
what would be our risk?
The biggest risk would be alarm call out wouldn't be functioning. Everything operates on a PLC, so it's a programmable logic controller. So like each unit process already has its commands, and it's in, let's just say it's in this little computer here. The one that's talking to it is at a desk here. This is where you actually see everything. But as far as the pumps knowing when to go on and off, it's happening here. The biggest issue would be alarm call out, and also the amount of staffing hours it would take to do regular tasks, like pumping sludge. When we pump sludge now, we valve it the way we need it, and then we set the daily parameters in the computer. If we don't have a computer, then it's go turn a switch, watch a level. Can't really do anything because you're monitoring that. Shut it off.
If a pump failed at night, would that be a big deal?
Not typically, because there's generally enough redundancy.
Okay.
But if there was a power blip and you lost, if you lost a leg at a pump station that had no power, that's more of a big deal, and that those things happen.
That would happen. That announcement would happen through that computer.
Yes. Yeah, we have basically there's a set of alarms and they're prioritized. The ones that have large priority, those ones call out. So basically, if there's an issue and someone needs to respond immediately, it calls out. If it's a minor issue and we can get to it in the morning, then we know about it and we can address it during regular hours.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any Thanks, John. I think that covers it, and we can move on to some of our repair and engineering projects. Phase three, still have some residual items on that?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to stay in the docket here for a little bit just because of warranty inspections. So I think I already reported probably last month that work's substantially complete, but planning on meeting with Woodard and Curran, the contractor this week to discuss some final stages of the project and which includes warranty inspection and also looking into if there's an option for the two remaining lateral top hat liners that weren't able to be done. Obviously, we're not getting charged for them because they weren't able to complete the work, but if we can get them done, maybe they can propose an alternate plan to do that. So that's something we're going to discuss this week, I think on Wednesday. So moving on to the primary, unless anyone has questions on this project, move on to the primary.
Primary, yeah.
So primary clarifier rehab, that's got some good headway this month. So the electrical duct bank's installed, concrete repairs have started. That's some inside the tank and some outside on like cracks, exterior cracks on the tank. Some of that work's been completed. Much of the equipment's been installed in primary clarifier too. So the scum skimmer, the upper guide rails, two of the four shafts are installed so far. And then this morning we found, so we have three primary clarifiers. Number one was found broken this morning. Similar to how we found primary two broken, we've repaired it I think several times, and eventually it was just kind of catastrophic destruction. So primary one we found broken this morning. Not entirely sure how bad it is yet. We have it almost completely drained and cleaned out. We'll be able to get down there tomorrow morning to assess the damage and see if we can repair it with parts that we have on hand. But either way, we are working with the contractor to expedite getting primary number two back online. So that way we're not running just one primary clarifier. Because right now we have it, we installed a plug. Normally should be able to valve it off, but we had to install a pneumatic plug to stop the flow to tanks one and two, and we're basically pushing everything to tank number three. So we're overloading that one a little bit, not terribly, but it's handling more than it's designed to handle. Generally, a primary clarifier you want an hour and a half to 3 hours of detention time. We're a little bit under an hour right now. Luckily, we have some fair weather this week, so.
What are our flows right now this week?
About 750,000. And should be dropping slowly, but I don't think we're going to be going up. I didn't see any rain in the forecast. So that's one good thing we have going for us. But hopefully, with the contractor bringing more laborers in tomorrow, and just lining everything up to really prioritize getting this tank back online. They're hopeful we can get it online early next week, but we'll see how things go.
That would be good if we had that project online.
Yeah, and we're going to try our best to get number one online ourselves as well. But either way, that's actually the next tank to get demoed. So demo tank one, fix it, or get it back online.
Yeah.
That one's operating and brand new. Demo tank one, repeat, and then demo tank three, and then rebuild that one. That's the schedule.
So replacing these parts was already in part of the clarifier project?
It's a full component replacement, but we don't.
Okay.
We didn't want to run less than two clarifiers at any time.
Yeah.
And we're kind of forced to at this point. So That's my report on primary clarifier rehab.
Stop you there. Maybe I didn't really understand that we were rehabbing all three. Like, I thought one was down and we were fixing that. That was kind of my...
Oh, yeah, nope.
We're really rehabbing all three for the project, okay? Good to know that, you know, good to...
Yes, I don't think it's going to cost us any more money. It's just...
Okay.
Just more headaches.
Will you go to one instead of three next?
We were planning going to one regardless. So...
That's good.
I'm glad it happened now and not in February or something like that, but...
Or when the flows were a million or something.
Yeah, then we might have been in trouble, but... Still might be in trouble, hopefully not. But that was reported to DEP as well, because that's a loss of equipment. So it's a required report. So unless anyone has any other comment or question, I can move on to facility planning. So minimal updates on that. The Woodard and Curran is trying to gather all the last remaining pieces of info for task one and task two memos. I think we already saw task two, like a draft memo. That was the INI report. But there's still some more information that needs to go into that. There's still more information that needs to go into task one. That's really more focused on collection system inventory. So this survey work, hydraulic profiling, things like that. So that's what they're working on right now. And they're planning to schedule site visits this month for evaluating existing conditions and possibilities for improvement. What could be reused, what can, where things can be located, things like that.
Okay, I haven't looked at the schedule for a bit. I'm just wondering then, when would Woodward and Curran give the next big presentation to us? Would it sounds like it might even be more like June or like next, I don't know what they're, say next May, you know, for next month, what would we expect in June? Do you have a good idea on that, or?
I think task one and task two memos will be ready this month from what I've been told.
Uh-huh.
So I would plan on at least getting notice later this month, or we could be talking about it at the next, either, I don't know if we'd incorporate it into a meeting, or if it'd be a, another special meeting, or could even be a daytime memo. It's really just informational. It's not,
not something we have to vote on. But
yeah, so we'll gauge on what you feel is appropriate for presentation on that.
Yeah, just something we have to think about if, when they're ready to give us all a presentation.
So the presentation will be, this is what we found, this is what we recommend, right? So they'll be coming out and saying, this is how big we think we ought to be enlarging it. So we have the larger picture or not?
Not quite yet, no. It's broken out into tasks. So it'll be just like we had the task two memo, I don't know, 2 or 3 months ago. That was the INI one. It'd be similar to that, but a different part of the project.
Okay.
And then when everything kind of comes together at the end, then it's, okay, this is what we're really looking at for solutions.
I believe that's June.
If we follow the schedule, I think the schedule might get pushed. I believe it got pushed back. So we're probably looking at, instead of in April, which is this month, completion of the project, it's July to September.
Oh.
That was what I had gathered, somewhere in that time frame.
So we'll have to be aware, like, it sounds like the project will be completing during the summer, which is not a good time for public informational hearings or meetings or whatever. Just, we'll have to think about how to deal with that. But
yeah. I really urge us not to do that presentation in July or August.
Right, right. Some of us may not be there either, so
the July weekend.
Unless we really don't want to.
Right, so we'll just have to keep that in mind when we, as things progress.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's really all I have for a report on facility planning.
All right. Well, I guess I'll have John keep going. Any other updates on the congressional grant request?
So the request was submitted on Thursday, April 2nd. So I printed out these, so I'll just hand these out. The top sheet is the table of the estimated values. for the, you know, linear footage, how many manholes, what the approximate cost is gonna be.
Okay.
So this is what was proposed, put in the application as a proposed project. So in the ballpark of a little less than 2.4 million.
Oh, it's over two, okay.
And then behind that, that table, I printed out all the letters of support that we received. So we had First Selectman Witkos, Board of Finance Chairman Brian Miller, Canton EDA Chair Matt Dingy, Canton Planning and Zoning Chair Mike Vogel, Canton Planning, Canton Inland Wetlands and Watercourses Agency Chair Adam Kessler. Then we also had Farmington River Watershed Association and Trout Unlimited. So I think Sarah put a lot of effort into getting us those last two, and also worked with Kevin.
Thank you.
I teased Kevin a little bit, but he needs to have your own. Yeah, this, you guys got a big gold star, because this was a rush on a very big, something on task, so this is good.
Yeah, I think we got this done in like 10 days, including a weekend too, so.
Which is fast, considering it's a federal application.
Yep.
Yeah.
So a lot of people helped us out, and, you know, town planner, assistant planner, they've had a role in this as well.
You write a very good letter, John.
Thanks.
With some help from Sarah, right? Both of you guys, yeah, thanks you guys.
Larry pushed us to get the Board of Finance on there, and that was, I think that was a really good one.
Yeah.
To have that in the packet. So, good, I thought it was a good team effort, and hopefully it's a convincing application.
That would be good.
Okay, we have Dick as our representative on the temporary plan of conservation and development. What do we have to redo that every 10, 20 years? I don't know what, if you can just give us a quick.
Every 10 years, yeah.
10 years?
It's supposed to be five, but because we did such a good job last time, they gave us an extra five.
Yeah.
So it's 10.
Okay.
Well, they held two meetings, attended introduction, organizing, picking a chair, defining what POCD is, and reviewing the current plan of development. Yeah. So the big thing they have to do next is pick a consultant. That's the next big step.
Okay, interviewing consultants. Okay.
Yeah.
That's all right, well, thanks for being our representative. And I think our final item is to vote on a new pickup truck, Ford F-250.
Yes, so that was part of the our WPCA CIP plan was to replace the F-250. I showed some pictures of that in our Sirico Rotter, I think sometime over the winter. And from what I gauged on the feedback, that sounded like the board was okay with replacing those two items. So I'd like to propose asking for $60,000 to replace our F-250 and then upfit it with tooling and snow plow and things we need. The one we have now is really already set up with, but it's 20 years old and it's seen better days. And then the money that we'd be using is located in our WPCA capital account, and it's basically that money exists there because it's the accrual of interest and leftovers from other projects that came in under budget. So just an interest in the past 12 months in that account. I think we collected $45,000. So that really covers a big chunk of it right there. And then just coming in under budget on projects, you know, we transfer say we think it's going to be $250,000 and it comes in at $240,000 or something like that. You know, that money stays in capital unless we make a motion to move it back. So we've accumulated a little bit extra in there. So right
good
now,
job, John.
Yeah, right. Yeah, a free pickup truck. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right now,
so
there's
question,
like a,
John.
Yeah.
How do you negotiate? I mean, do you have a particular? Do you go out to various dealerships, or do you have a?
There's a state bid on those trucks. So right
now,
you're
on the state bid list.
Yeah.
Oh.
So I think Monaco Ford is the. They have the state bid right now for Ford trucks.
Okay.
So we would go through them.
And is there ever a state surplus list that you could just go to the state and get one from their surplus truck list?
I can look into something like that.
They do have one. I mean, okay. I work for the state. I know we have this kind of thing. I don't know if they've got a new F-250 waiting for you to.
Okay.
But there is such a thing as, you know, the state surplus that they do. Spin this stuff off really cheaply.
Yeah. Do you know if the town's ever utilized that?
I don't.
Because I don't.
Yeah, that I don't know.
Just to find a first step of who to ask to get me there.
Shoot you an email.
Okay.
If I'm in the office tomorrow, let me shoot you an email about how to access that.
Okay. Yeah.
Do they have vehicles in state surplus?
I do believe they do, yeah.
Wow, I
don't
know that. I know they have furniture.
Yeah.
So if you need desks or file cabinets or something.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, you never know. They probably don't, but you never know.
Yeah.
So.
No, it's definitely worth worth a check. It might be.
Well, I'll go ahead. I'll move the WPCA approve the use of up to $60,000 within the WPCA capital reserve to purchase and upfit a new Ford F-250 with snowplow accessories and tools.
Second.
Second from Bob. All those in favor?
Aye.
Thank you.
With that, the next meeting, May 4th at 6 p.m., and I'll move to adjourn this regular meeting at 6:58 p.m.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
So, thank you. Thanks, everybody.